So thank you for being back for the second part of this seminar. It's about approaching the Holy Dham through the mercy of the Acharyas. I have here also two guns. Prabhupada, when he was a kid, his father bought him a toy gun, and then Prabhupada said, "No, I want another one. I have two hands, I need two guns." So I have two cups of water so that we can remember Srila Prabhupada like this. That's nice. I wanted to approach Vrindavan through the mercy of the Acharyas. When we go alone and when we associate directly with the Holy Dham, undoubtedly we are perceiving something of the transcendental atmosphere. This is part of India. In India there's always crying babies and smells and everything. So too, I specially organized it that they would be here. Soon, an auto rickshaw has also been ordered. It will come like this to add to the authenticity. So that's fine. Yes. We are approaching Vrindavan exactly with these external disturbing elements. Noise, insects, and heat, and yeah, all these things, and bad roads, and then you come to the Dham, and suddenly it's not like the Krishna book anymore. You know, Akrura came to Vrindavan and he rolled in the dust of Krishna's lotus feet. It's more like, oh God, that was a hell of a drive. I'm finished. So it is difficult sometimes to get into the internal consciousness when we're really there. For example, Dinabandhu has this capacity to be always ecstatic, even in moments when it's not ecstatic. You know, you come to one temple, the deities are closed, you have to wait for 3 hours, and my mind goes, "Let's go home, we'll see it next time." and he will just stay for the 3 hours in ecstasy waiting. Yes, it is there where one gets the mercy. So Tapu Bhumi it is. The Dham is that place where austerity has to be performed. We cannot go beyond it. Krishna will arrange it somehow or other. That price is to be paid. Yesterday I ended describing how Srila Prabhupada came back from the Western world and how he was honored by the residents of Vrindavan, who accepted him as like an ambassador of Vrindavan. One who went to the West and spread the glories of the Dham and of the worship of Krishna in the West successfully. One of them who did it, you know. So they recognized it, that it was extraordinary, and they had, the mayor came, and there were public speeches to honor Prabhupada, and at that time also that arch over the road was made, that Prabhupada gate, which is a gate to glorify Prabhupada, but also I think it has a symbolic meaning, showing us that one can only really enter through that gate, through Prabhupada. That's our entrance. We came through that gate. That's the way we came to Krishna consciousness. That's our entrance. And if we independently try to connect with the Dham, we will surely experience something. Because in Vrindavan, you have these moments that you come somewhere and you feel Krishna was just here. Where did he go? Maybe around the corner, somewhere. Where did he go? It feels like Krishna was just here minutes ago. Maybe he's still nearby. Also in Vrindavan, we have this. Some places are just effulgent, naturally effulgent. There is some light, something about these places. So anyone on his own can also perceive something of the transcendental nature of the Dham. But we fall short. Right? Let's say we'll go to Radhakund, most sacred place in the entire universe. Well, okay, we are mentally prepared. Now we go to a very holy place, so we must be respectful and so on. Ultimately, what we will see is we'll see the Kund with the steps as Raghunath Das made them, and we'll see different temples that were constructed there over the years with different deities. We'll see some local devotees. We hear some of the kirtan over the loudspeakers. And that's what we'll see. And you can go to different holy places. The Bhajan Kutir of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, where he wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. All right, let's go there for a moment and offer our obeisances. We can do. There's even a place on a corner where there is a tree which is has a branch which is sort of turned. It just looks like when you wring a cloth and the cloth starts to get all rippled, the branch of the tree also looks like it's turned. So they say Krishna turned this branch and used it for the swing pastimes. So we hear. Then if we approach Radhakund to the writings of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the Govinda Lilamrita, then we find a whole different Radhakund. Then we find a place with in the middle the Sangam between Radhakund and Shamakund, where there's a temple of jewels. Right? I didn't see any jewels. I don't know if you saw, but I didn't see them. Then there are four jeweled swings on the corners of Radhakund. And there are these pavilions all around Radhakund, which are the residence of the Astasakis, who are there making very nice arrangements to receive Radha and Krishna. So in the Govinda Lilamrita, we find such descriptions. When we go to the birthplace of Krishna in Gokul, then in Govinda Lilamrita it is described that in that birthplace there is the palace of Nanda Maharaj and columns of lapis lazuli and so on. And then it is described how the quarters of Nanda Maharaj are on one side of the palace. There are rooms all the way along the boundary walls. Yes, and it's all built up like that. Then in the middle there is a big courtyard, and in the courtyard there is also a house, again, a central house, a central building in the courtyard. So it is described that central building is an assembly house. And that assembly house is a place where Radha, Krishna and their associates meet. And it is described how that assembly house is completely spiritual. It has unlimited rooms. You just can open endless doors, and there's always more behind each door. There's no end to it. So clearly, there are different dimensions in perceiving the Dham. We are not seeing any. When I go to the birthplace of Krishna, there are all these pandas. They come and they want money, and they say, put donation here. It's okay, no, thank you. I have a different experience. I don't see what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami described. In Vrindavan, Kesigat is made of gold and jewels. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes. All I saw was sandstone. Lots of sandstone. So, and that was very nice, beautiful. But no golden jewels. So, like this, there are many dimensions in perceiving the Holy Dham. And yes, we want to perceive it through the Vaishnavas. So Srila Prabhupada is the first one who gives us entrance in Vrindavan, and that entrance we get by being engaged in his service. So we begin with our first service, our 16 rounds minimum, our regulative principles, that is there, and possibly more, another service. Prabhupada translated Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as Nectar of Devotion. And the essence of the Nectar of Devotion, the whole foundation of the entire book, is actually dasyam, or servitorship. It is pointed out that it begins with the verse Akila Rasamrita Murti. It said Krishna is entering into different relationships with different devotees. And there are five principal rasas, seven secondary rasas, and it's all about... And then the rest of the book begins to describe a process. Yesterday morning, Bhakti Vaibhava Maharaj quoted how pure devotional service, klesa, di, subhada, and then sudurlaba, mokshala gutta krit, sandrananda visesatma, and Sri Krishna akarsani. How it first destroys impurities in the heart, destroys all suffering, it makes everything auspicious, rarely attained, we lose all taste for liberation, our devotional service gets more and more dense every day, sandrananda visesatma, and finally, Sri Krishna akarsani, devotional service attracts Krishna. So, like this, it describes a process and of gradually advancing. And then it says, you must come to the perfect stage, which is anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam, or to be free from any material desire of karma and jnana and just serve Krishna favorably. Then you have reached the stage for entering into these eternal relationships. So in this way, the Nectar of Devotion at the beginning speaks about the eternal relationships, then speaks about the process of getting qualified, and then it begins to speak more about the eternal relationships. So Prabhupada gave us that. And in 1972, Srila Prabhupada brought his disciples back to his rooms in Vrindavan, and there in the courtyard of the Radha Damodar temple, Prabhupada would daily give lectures on the Nectar of Devotion. It is said that it was there, in that place, that Srila Prabhupada had resided for a long time. He had two rooms, one his residential room, the other his kitchen. And from the kitchen, there's a window, and you can look straight on the samadhi and bhajan kutir of Rupa Goswami. And that was Prabhupada's regular view. Just like someone tried to invite me to come to Skopje and said, in Skopje we have a beautiful lake, and you can swim there, and the water is so nice, you can go underwater, you can even drink the water. I was thinking, yes, in Vrindavan we can also do that, but then it's transcendental water. So no place in the world can attract me, really, I must honestly say, after Vrindavan. What's the point of any hill when it's not Govardhan Hill? What's the point of swimming in some lake when it's not Kusum Sarovar, right? When it's not transcendental, right? Even if it's beautiful, if you don't get the mercy while you're swimming in that water, I mean, I couldn't get excited about it, right? But these transcendental waters in Vrindavan, yes, oh yes, I'll swim there again and again, right? even if they're if it's full of green plants, you know, go in, come back up, plans on the head or not, right? Let's go, let's get the mercy. So in this way, yes, the Holy Dham is there. It is said that there's a book which was written by a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, female disciple named Mula Prakriti. She has passed on, but she was a very staunch book distributor for a very long time and strong devotee. So she was very a powerful personality. And she went to India, to the Dhams, and went to look for Prabhupada's history. And she went and interviewed many of the people who were there when Prabhupada was alone in Vrindavan. And she wrote this book, and I think it's called something, if I remember, something like Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All. Yeah? Okay. Friend to All, huh? Yeah. Okay, I always forget it. Anyway, in there is a story, and that story is that one night Srila Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis appeared before Srila Prabhupada, and that they personally instructed him on how to spread Krishna consciousness, actually. And then one man said that somehow or other the story came out, and he heard it from Prabhupada directly. So many years later, Hari Sori, who was Prabhupada's servant, he found out about that story, and he heard that story then, right? Long before Mula Prakriti wrote it down in her book, Hari Sori already heard that story. And then one day Hari Sori asked Prabhupada, and he said, "Prabhupada, I've heard this story that actually when you were here in Radha Damodar that one night, Rupa and Sanatan personally appeared before you and instructed you. Is it true?" Prabhupada said, "Oh, everybody knows that." So it's quite confirmed, actually, that story. And therefore, I think it's okay to accept. Prabhupada certainly had that intimate connection. And as a preacher, as a writer, Prabhupada was very much representing the Goswamis in the maybe it was late 80s that someone came up with a point of actually Prabhupada's books are not Prabhupada's books, they are actually the commentaries of the Goswamis. He's not at all the author. Actually, so many things, he's just translated the commentaries of the Goswamis. Yes. Yes. That is true. Isn't that wonderful? Huh? That person thought it wasn't so wonderful. I thought it's wonderful. It's exactly what makes these books even better. Huh? Prabhupada indeed included all the commentaries of the Goswamis, of the various commentators on Bhagavatam, very carefully. And then he also added his own commentary. So in this way, he brought everything, not his own ideas. No, he brought us all the wealth of all the previous acharyas. Here it is, the essence. Here it is. I've collected this for you. Please take it. Please take it. So in this way, we're going through Srila Prabhupada, and we are looking at the acharyas, and today also we will do that. Come on, behave. Why is it misbehaving? Always, electronics always misbehave when you are in the middle of a program. It doesn't want to go. Come on, go away. Close. Yes, now it's going. Jai. So, yesterday I spoke from the Uddhava Sandesh from Rupa Goswami, and it was Krishna who instructed Uddhava while Krishna was in Mathura and feeling separation from Vrindavan and thinking about the residence of Vrindavan and thinking about particularly Srimati Radharani, how much she must be suffering in separation and practically dying. He felt he had to do something, and he finally sent Uddhava, and he gave Uddhava instructions how to go, and Uddhava, and then he described the route that Uddhava would go, and Krishna was having many memories. And we came yesterday at the end to Chatikara. Chatikara is the turn off where you go to Vrindavan. It says right of Chatikara is the temple of Garuda Govinda, where Sridhar took the form of Garuda and Krishna stood on. And then to the right of that is the lake of Kaliya. So we can actually see to the right of that is also the Krishna Balaram Mandir. So actually to the back, all the backland of the Krishna Balaram Mandir, where different devotees like Madhuvan Colony and beyond, that's probably all the lake of Kaliya. Just so we know, sort of that area. Yeah, according to the Uddhava Sandesh, that's the area of the lake of Kaliya. And then to the left, you go towards Govardhan. And then towards Nandagram. So, Uddhava was on the way to Nandagram as the messenger. So there in Nandagram, Krishna lives in great opulence. Indeed, the palace of on that Nandishwar hill of Nanda Maharaj is extraordinary. Again, many jewels and so on. And there is running water in the houses. See, when they carry pots, right, in that place, they're not water pots. In the only pots with milk and sweet and so on, because the water is, they have bamboo water aqueducts that bring water into the house. So everyone had running water in the houses, and they had beautiful walls around the house. The house of Nanda Maharaj has a wall which is studded with jewels, and there's a waterfall coming off the wall, and then a moat of water around it. So it is spectacular. Those jewels are shining in the sunlight and in the moonlight, and meanwhile they glow. And the water is bouncing off the wall. So it's an amazing palace, actually. So Krishna is residing there. It is said that in the morning, from neighboring Varsana, Srimati Radharani comes. And she's carried in a palanquin by many maid servants, and they carry her in a palanquin to the house of Yasoda, where she will assist in the cooking because of the benediction of Devarsa Muni. So in that way there is great opulence, actually, also in Vrindavan, not only in Dwarka but also in Vrindavan there is great opulence. It's not that Dwarka is very opulent and Vrindavan simple. Although it is said in Dwarka there is this Aishwarya and not in Vrindavan. The Aishwarya in Dwarka simply means that all the devotees are aware that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And in Vrindavan, they forget it. It's not important. He's a resident here. Still, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So various generations of acharyas have written about Vrindavan, and today I am going to read a little bit from the work of Baladev Vichabhushan, a relatively late acharya in our line, because basically you have, if you simply look at the Sampradaya, you have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then you have Rupa, Sanatan, Then you have Jiva Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami. They are the later Goswamis. They're younger. And then after, from Raghunath Das Goswami comes Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And Krishnadas, he was the Siksha disciple of Raghunath Das. And then Narottam Das Thakur is taking inspiration from Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comes 100 years later than Narottam. But Narottam is his inspiration. And then Baladev takes inspiration from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So we are then in the 17th century. So Baladev Vichabhusan wrote the Aishvarya Kadambini. And he writes, because of his great handsomeness, sweetness, charm, and opulence, because of the musical sound of his flute, because he's filled with love, and because of his host of friends and relatives, great poets and philosophers say that Lord Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So let's look at that for a moment. Because of his handsomeness, no one is as beautiful as Krishna. It's stunning. When you see him, you get shocked. You can't move. You just it takes away your breath. That it's not just, oh, yeah, Krishna, he's very nice. He looks really good. No, it's just like, I mean, it's just overwhelming. Men and women, doesn't matter. Everyone is blown out just seeing Krishna like that. And just looking at such beauty, one thinks, this is no longer human. This is no longer possible. This is more than anything that can exist. He must be God. So just his beauty alone is telling the story that he is the Supreme Lord. Then his sweetness is described. I remember one year I was with Sachinandan Maharaj on a boat and a whole group of devotees in the Danish waters sailing, and Maharaj gave this seminar about the sweetness of Krishna, and it was all about Krishna is so sweet and he looks so sweet and this sweet and that sweet, and it was all sweet, you know. And at one point it just got too sweet for me, you know. I just being, having a bad character and being not sweet myself, when things get too sweet, I couldn't handle the sweetness. So then I spoke after him. So then I said, well, I very much appreciated the presentation of Sachinandan Maharaj, but I have one little question, right? And it said, like, why is it that in the Middle Ages, 1/3 of the world population died of the Black Plague? Why is it that just a decade ago, in 3 days, 5 million people were killed in Rwanda? In one night in Bangladesh, 500,000 people drown. Where is your sweet Krishna? In the middle of all that, you know? Is that sweet also? So I asked him then, how is Krishna so sweet? So I remember that he rolled up the sleeves of his sweater. And he even loosened his scarf. And he was getting serious. And then philosophically explained how even this is sweet. This is bittersweet. Because ultimately, the sweetness of Krishna means that that Krishna will leave no stone unturned. Krishna is not a passive Lord who is just seated on a throne accepting our offerings. Another golden plate with beautiful fruits. Bless, bless. Another offering. No, that's not Krishna. Krishna is the one who is out of his sweetness destroying our material life. Mritya sarva harascham. As death he destroys everything. Yasyaham manukrinami taddanam harije sanai. He acts as a destroyer. Very sweet. Simply because Krishna, he cannot not wait. He cannot wait. So this point is a very difficult theological point in our philosophy that I've just reached now. And because, you know, we are the living beings who said to Krishna, no, it's all right. I want to go. I want to go to the material world. Even when Krishna wanted us to stay in the spiritual world, we said, no, thank you. I want to try it. I want to try to see what it's like to be the Lord and Master, to be the enjoyer. And here we are, trying hard. Right? But why is it that Krishna put sand in the sweet rice? It's not fair. It's not fair. Why did he put suffering in the material energy just when we are enjoying? Why didn't he give us the independence to enjoy when we wanted to? Why did he have to create suffering in the material world? Active suffering. Okay, passive suffering means the suffering of missing Krishna. All right. That was logical if we left the spiritual world. So some suffering of, some homesickness. Okay. But why this active suffering if Krishna is sweet, if he's not cruel? Why someone gets squashed under a car? I have seen it. I have seen. So much suffering I have seen with my own eyes. You also. Wars. Some people are here from Sarajevo. They can tell you stories about the dead bodies in the street. Yes, I have heard. And I've seen myself such things. So how about that? Is that sweet? Why this extra suffering? Why? That is Krishna's sweetness. It shows that how deep Krishna's love is. He cannot tolerate it. Krishna is like a parent who has a rebellious son. Parents who have a rebellious son who said, like, you know, it's my life and I do what I want and I'm leaving home. And he, of course, goes in the wrong direction with the wrong friends. And the parents say, yeah, we let you free to do whatever you want, of course. But meanwhile, they're making all kinds of plans how to spoil his so-called freedom, right? So that, you know, he'll learn a lesson and come back home soon because they're suffering. So actually it shows that Krishna is suffering. It's not we who are suffering. Why are we suffering? No, it's Krishna who is suffering. Hear the Lord, who is enjoying, the complete enjoyer, that it's incomplete. There is still one living being in the material world. Even although there is an ocean of transcendental nectar which is eternally increasing, it's still incomplete. The Chaitanya Charitamrita describes how Srimati Radharani is discovering the qualities of Krishna, and each time when she finds a new quality of Krishna, she loves that quality also. So in this way, her love for Krishna is eternally increasing, unlike material relationships, you know. It's love and romance at the beginning, and later it's like a belly sitting in front of the TV, snoring, sweating. Yeah. Romance days are over. She has curl pins and, you know, not as beautiful as before. That's mundane. Yeah, it goes like that. But in the spiritual world, the love, it's not that one reaches, the love reaches a saturation point. It's always increasing. It's always new. There's always more qualities to discover, and the love is growing. And as the love of Radharani grows, Krishna, seeing that, it touches his heart, and his love also grows. So in this way, the love of Radha and Krishna is growing eternally. But not only of Radha and Krishna, of Krishna and all the devotees. So when we speak about the ocean of transcendental love, the Premamritambo, the ocean that the Goswamis were absorbed in, Krishna Kirtana Gana Nartana Paro Premamritambo Nidhi, that ocean of transcendental love, it's always increasing. It is the love of the devotees that is increasing in discovering Krishna's unlimited qualities, and it is Krishna whose love is increasing in seeing that love increasing. And then the devotees see Krishna's love increasing in reciprocation, and they love him even more. And then Krishna loves them more. And like this, it grows and grows. So this is the ocean of transcendental love, which is growing. Now, even one soul that is not part of it, Krishna feels something lacking. And therefore Krishna is eager to somehow or other bring this one soul also. There is some incompleteness. Although the nectar is unlimited, still, it could be more unlimited. And therefore, Krishna couldn't wait any longer. So, okay. Then, when nobody watched, he put some sand in the sweet grass. And we are here. Enjoy sense gratification. But in reality, we enjoy sense gratification. We enjoy the suffering in the material energy. And after a while, we say, I don't want this anymore. It's not that. So Krishna is arranging like this. So it is sweet after all, but it takes some philosophical depth to capture that. Okay, that's one point, and it's already 5 to 2, so the time is flying. You brought those books already? Okay. There, for those who didn't get a book yesterday and who don't live in Zagreb or in near to Zagreb, where there are many more books, those they can still get one copy now after. Yeah, they can. Disguised as birds, the great demigods would regularly eat the remnants of Krishna and Balaram's meals. This is a great wonder. So, just see, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva would come to Vrindavan as birds, and Krishna and Balaram are sitting there with their cowherd boyfriends, picnicking. And Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, disguised as birds, are just hopping around and taking the crumbs. I mean, just understand the relationship. It's amazing. This is amazing. This is amazing. Riding on a chariot with his brother Balaram and accompanied by his mother, who rode on a palanquin, Lord Hari would sometimes travel to the forest to serve the great devotee sages at their hermitages in the forest. When the Lord offered them yogurt and different sweets and other palatable foodstuffs, these intelligent sages became filled with bliss. So I just what a vision. You know, these acharyas, they open up whole different dimension. Here Krishna is not just a cowherd boy. Okay, you go, okay. What are we doing today? Oh, well, we're going to the forest. Okay. What are we doing today? Well, herding cows. Oh, yeah. Okay. Didn't we do that yesterday also? Yeah. What are we going to do tomorrow? Again, to the forest, right? Okay. And what are the boys going to do?
Peacock! Peacock!
Imitate the peacocks. No? Like that. It's, isn't it the same every day? No, they do so many things. We see they do more than we think. They go visit the sages in the forests, chariots, distribute some charity. When the colorful bird of the sound of Krishna's flute flew into the sky in the Vrindavan forest, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Narada, and all the demigods became struck with wonder. The hills began to flow like rivers. The rivers stood like immovable hills, and all the girls of Vraja became plunged in the river of transcendental unrest. So imagine, rivers become like hills, and hills become like rivers. How can we imagine this? So therefore, you can see, I just give a few verses because time is such a thing in the material world. But I just give a few verses to illustrate a point. Just through these few verses, we expanded our whole experience of the Dhamma. So I know that most people are too lazy to ever pick up a book. And then in these festivals, they get the swamis to come. And the swamis, they have to work hard. They have to read all the books, summarize them in a brilliant seminar. And everyone goes, that was far out. That was really nice. Saves us all the trouble of reading all these books. And they give us the best, right? But in this seminar, I'm not doing that. What I'm doing in this seminar, I'm trying to feed you a few sweets just so that you go like, yummy, yum. Is there more? And there is. But you have to go and get it yourself. So I recommend that you read the Aishwarya Kadambini. It's a super interesting small book. It's not terribly rasic, you know what I mean? No, that's sort of not for, that you think, well, but are we qualified for this? No, it's okay. It's just nice things, you know. The colorful bird of the sound of Krishna's flute flew into the sky of the Vrindavan forest. Can you visualize it? That sound, like, ooh, it's dancing in the sky. And then, yes, the demigods are all shocked and overwhelmed. And the rivers, they freeze. The Yamuna freezes. And the hills begin to melt. So, just in this way, we visualize the spiritual world. So, yes, Aishwarya Kadambini, very nice book to read. Uddhava Sandesh, very nice book to read, both of them. And Prabhupada mentions we can read. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 1, he mentions the whole list of these books. They're there. So I'm just giving you a taste, and now it's already 2 o'clock. So time's up. What to do? I just have a few of these books left then that I will give you. To those who didn't get, and then we'll meet again in Rath Yatra, I guess. What to do? You have a question, but it's 2 o'clock. Prasadam, excuse me. You call that nothing? It's because you ate too many pizzas yesterday. All right, tell. My prasadam is. I don't care about your prasadam. Okay, question.
Another question. Did Krishna warn us about the material, about suffering in the material world before we choose to come here, you know, like a father?
Okay.
Like a father, if you want to make something and he would like to, you know,
Borders.
Think,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, the coming to the material world is something like it is explained that there is a Tatastha region, a marginal region, right? Or whether it is a physical location or a state, just like we say in this seminar, Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. The Tatastha is also a state of consciousness. So, the marginal state of consciousness. Basically what it is a state where upon eternity the living being comes to the conclusion that I could also be the enjoyer rather than the servant. Interesting idea. So that's that line of reasoning, when the idea is interesting, is Tatastha. One is then immediately in Tatastha consciousness, in marginal consciousness. One can stay there for a little while and contemplate the idea. It is said, it is curiosity. It is just the curiosity, but what would it be like that keeps us in that Tatastha, in the Tatastha condition or Tatastha region. From the Tatastha state, one can fall. From there, one can decide. Either one can say, no, forget this. This is rubbish. I'll go back to serving Krishna. Or one can think, no, I'll go to the material world. And then Krishna, if he so desires, at that state, when we think go, then Krishna can say, don't go. Because Krishna, he may not always do so, but he may do so. He's independent after all. He can do anything or everything he wants. In the same way we see when the living being returns to the spiritual world, it's not that you were in the past times with Krishna, then you went to the material world, and you know, say you were a cowherd boy, and suddenly there's one cowherd boy less, and then one day, you know, you're back to Godhead, and suddenly there's again another cowherd boy running, one more, you know, running in the forest. Okay, all right, plop, you know. Okay, so, okay, somebody went back to Godhead. It's not described like that. Sanatan Goswami describes that Gopakumar comes back, and he comes to this land, and in this land everyone is absent-minded. Everyone is sort of, he asks, where am I? No one answers. Everyone is sort of looking with glazy eyes in one direction. And then even the trees, the branches of the trees are all pointing in that same direction. The birds are all looking in that same direction. That is the direction that Krishna left in the morning to go to the forest. And all those remaining behind are looking in that direction, waiting. For the evening, for the sign of that cloud of dust to come in the sky. And before that cloud of dust, one can already hear the flute. But it's just the wind. It's just the wind blowing into the bamboos in the forest that makes the sound of the flute. And the dust, it's just some wind that creates dust. It's not, it's too early. No, it's not Krishna yet. No. So all are waiting the whole day, and he sees like that. So finally, when Krishna comes back from the forest, then he sees Gopakumar, who now is in his spiritual body known as Sarup. And he says, Sarup! Krishna sees him and faints. And then the gopis say, who's he? An agent of Kamsa. And they're ready to get heavy. But Balaram says, no, he's actually an old friend of Krishna. Krishna is very happy to see him. Balaram takes Sarup by the hand and tells him, chant in Krishna's ear. Sarup is chanting in Krishna's ear, and then Krishna comes back to his senses. And then Krishna takes Sarup. He takes Sarup. He said, Sarup, he embraces him. He takes him with him. He said, come, you take prasadam with me. And they go, and they go into the house of Nanda Maharaj, and they sit down. Nanda Maharaj is already waiting, and they get prasadam. And Radharani has cooked all these delicious sweets. And actually, Sarup, it turns out he is a member, a family member. He's related to Radharani in the family of Sridhar. And Sarup is sitting next to Krishna. Then some sweets are placed on the plate of Krishna. Krishna tastes them and makes a face like, horrible. Everyone is shocked. Everyone is shocked. What is this? Yasoda is like looking at Radharani. What did you do? You know what I mean? What did you make here? Are you poisoning my child? Right? And Krishna says, oh, these are unedible. And then he takes the sweets and throws them at Swarup on his plate. And he says, here, you taste them, you know, since it's your family that has produced them. And Swarup tastes the greatest nectar, you know. He hasn't tasted such nectar ever. That's like amazing. And so in this way, he's back to Godhead. He's not just plop suddenly back, you know. No, Krishna welcomes him back personally. So it's a very personal thing coming back to Godhead. It's a very personal thing leaving. It hurts Krishna very much. So yes, Krishna. Mostly Krishna is there to say, don't go. No, it's all right. I'll be right back. No problem. I'll be okay. I'll be careful. Huh? Just like your son, you know. You don't go. Don't go. No. But what can you do? You have to let him go. It's a Saturday night. Oh, God. It's a Saturday night. But you can't keep him home. You can't tie him up. You can, but for how long? Yeah. So like this. Yes, indeed. The relationship is very personal. And then, yeah, as Krishna took prasad, we will also do it. And yours may not be ready. Too bad for you. But mine is. So, I'm somehow or other going to climb off this Vyasasana. It's like a mountain.